I'm Veronica Dudo. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, the Department of Justice threatens the Federal Reserve with a criminal indictment, what it's linked to, and how the Fed chairman is responding. As Venezuela reels after the capture of Maduro, Pope Leo meets with opposition leader Maria Corina Machado, which she asked the Holy Father. In Iran, protests turn deadly as many now ask if the U.S. will get involved. Plus, new Catholics will take you to Rome and show you the special tradition Pope Leo took part in. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast of St. Marguerite Bourgeois. Our top story tonight: tensions ramp up between the White House and the Federal Reserve. Fed Chair Jerome Powell says the Department of Justice served the central bank with subpoenas and threatened it with a criminal indictment. It all has to do with some testimony Powell gave, plus building renovations and interest rates. Tonight, both the administration and Fed chief weigh in on the DOJ's actions. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Well, good evening to you, Veronica. President Trump has been very critical of the Fed chief over interest rates, demanding they be lowered. But tonight, the White House says the president did not direct his Justice Department to investigate Jerome Powell.
Fed Chair Jerome Powell takes aim at the Trump administration.
But this unprecedented action should be seen in the broader context of the administration's threats and ongoing pressure.
Powell released a Sunday night video disclosing the subpoenas.
The threat of criminal charges is a consequence of the Federal Reserve setting interest rates based on our best assessment of what will serve the public, rather than following the preferences of the president.
In June, Powell testified before the Senate Banking Committee regarding the Fed's $2.5 billion renovation of two office buildings, a project President Donald Trump has criticized as excessive. The two men took a tour in July.
We'd like to see it get finished, and in many ways it's too bad it started. But it did start, and it's been under construction for a long time.
Time and again, President Trump has blasted Powell over interest rates, including this post last year. Jerome, too late Powell, a stubborn moron, must substantially lower interest rates now. If he continues to refuse, the board should assume control and do what everyone knows has to be done. On the North Lawn, National Economic Council Director Kevin Hassett tells reporters.
I guess the question is, if you think the building costs $20 billion or $10 billion, do you think at some point that it's appropriate for the federal government to investigate?
Hassett, who called Powell a good person, said it's really important to understand where taxpayer money goes.
Seems like the Justice Department has decided that they want to see what's going on over there with this building that's, you know, massively more expensive than any building in the history of Washington.
Powell adding in his video.
The Fed, through testimony and other public disclosures, made every effort to keep Congress informed about the renovation project.
And I asked the press secretary about the video.
And also, President Trump, has he seen the video put out by Jerome Powell on Sunday? And if so, what's his reaction?
That video was put out after I was with the president when Air Force One landed last night, I believe. So I was no longer with him when that video came out. I don't know if he's seen it or not.
The press secretary also telling reporters.
One thing for sure, the president's made it quite clear, is Jerome Powell is bad at his job. As for whether or not Jerome Powell is a criminal, that's an answer the Department of Justice is going to have to find out. And it looks like they intend to find that out.
A bipartisan group of former Fed chairs and top economists critical of the legal actions, saying the possible loss of Fed independence could hurt the broader economy. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Anti-government protests continue in a number of cities in Iran despite a new nationwide internet blackout. International calls are also being blocked. So far, it's estimated 500 people have been killed and more than 11,000 arrested. All this as President Trump renews a threat to attack Iran if security forces violently crush the protests. But some U.S. lawmakers in both parties question if that's the best approach. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with the latest. Eric.
Well, good evening, Veronica. The White House states that Iran told President Trump, quote, it's prepared for war but ready to negotiate with the U.S. based on mutual respect and interests. This after President Trump weighed the possibility of military intervention.
The leaders of Iran called, they want to negotiate. I think they're tired of being beat up by the United States. We may meet with them. I mean, a meeting is being set up.
But the president says his administration is weighing possible military intervention. Iran warning American military bases and shipping lanes in the region will be treated as targets for retaliation if the U.S. intervenes. This is outrage, opposition, and grief mount in the streets of Tehran and around the country. On Capitol Hill, some lawmakers caution against military action on Iran, saying it may rally the Iranian people against an outside enemy.
U.S. military action in Iran would be a massive mistake. It would have the effect of giving the Iranian regime the ability to say it's the U.S. that's screwing our country up.
Others say with so many Iranians demonstrating, now is the time to take action.
If it continues to make more sense, absolutely. I think I was the only Democrat that fully supported our strike of their Iranian nuclear facilities last year. And now, by then, without those kinds of strikes, Iran could have acquired a nuclear bomb.
It's not a complicated question. Is America better off with a country that has a leader who hates us and wants to kill us, or to have a country with a leader who likes us and wants to be friends with us?
But any military strike brings into questions whether Congress should be involved.
I do think President Trump needs to consult with Congress before threatening that he will randomly take strikes against Iran's leadership. He seems to have suddenly found his inner nation builder as he is taking a sharp turn from how he campaigned.
You're creating a disaster for the country. If a member of Congress doesn't like what the president's doing as commander-in-chief militarily, cut off funding for that operation. We have power of the purse. You can do that.
It's important to note that during Donald Trump's presidency, Congress has repeatedly tried to limit his war powers concerning Iran, passing war powers resolutions in 2020 after a drone strike. But Trump ended up vetoing that move. Now, this week, the Senate will vote on limiting the president's Trump's powers against Venezuela, and some lawmakers are considering adding Iran to that resolution as well. We'll stay on top of the issue. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Thanks, Eric. Joining us for more is Dr. Bianca Adair, director of the Intelligence Studies Program at the Catholic University of America and a retired CIA officer. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Iran says it is now open to talks with the U.S. after weeks of massive protests. Do you think those talks will actually happen? And what will be the demands from each side?
Well, yes, the Iranians will absolutely negotiate with the United States. But keep in mind that their purpose of negotiating is actually to buy time. And to think that there anything really substantive is going to come out of those talks is I think it's just kind of an unprecedented thing if it were to happen. And the reason is the supreme leader is well aware that he is in serious trouble. And even though he recently blamed all of the protests on the United States and specifically President Trump, he is also keenly aware of the circumstances in his country and the fact that he even announced, or they had the government announce, that prices are going to increase between 50 and 100% on everyday goods that Iranians need just to survive. The talks, however, are the normal window dressing where the Iranians are trying to at least bring the U.S. to the table with the hope that the United States will not strike when they're supposed to be diplomatic talks.
Now, President Trump did say that those talks are ongoing, but that they might take action before a meeting. How likely do you think that is, and what type of action might we see?
I'm not entirely sure that there will be any action unless it's something like perhaps blowing up weapons caches, things that are going to be used against those protesters. The reality is it's very difficult to determine what you're going to hit in Iran without destabilizing it completely. And most of even our allies in Europe would be a little concerned if we destabilize the country before everyone figures out what to do. You have so many different groups of people that are part of the protests, and you also have very virulent anti-Western individuals that make up the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, as well as those that are around the supreme leader himself. So military action brings with it a whole host of pitfalls. This is a very complicated situation because the Supreme Leader has rallied extremists around him. He himself is an extremist, and he has rallied those individuals as part of his security and military. That's how he keeps his power. The protesters are from all walks of life. So if the United States wants to assist the protesters, this may end up being really a job for the intelligence community while we continue to play the diplomatic game, understanding that the Supreme Leader has yet to have yielded on anything, on any talks.
Now, as you mentioned, there's a lot of things happening at the same time, including pro and anti-government protesters. Hundreds are dead as protests continue to sweep across Iran. While we've seen some protests through the years, does this moment seem different?
It is different, and it's different. If you were, you and I were discussing this a year and a half ago, I would say, no, it's no different. It's the same thing. But given the number of the security officials that the Israeli military were able to remove from the battlefield, so to speak, as well as the United States' destruction of aspects of the Iranian nuclear program, what you have is a very weakened Iranian state. And given that the United States and Israel have now further weakened all of the proxies that Iran uses throughout the regime, you have what the Supreme Leader has feared the absolute most, which is to somehow be alienated from all the proxies that were created over the last 20 plus years. And now it's a battle between the United States and Iran, and Iran doesn't want that. So what you have is a situation that is the most volatile one that we've seen, certainly, and I've been working on this problem set for 25 years. I've not seen an Iran in such a backed in the corner position. While it's still heavily armed, and what people are not discussing are the sheer number of missiles that they have. We've worried about the nuclear program for obvious reason, but they have a large weapons cache. And the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, one of the commanders just recently came out and using the most virulent extremist way to capture Quranic concepts of war was discussing the need to abolish the United States and anyone that supports us. It's the same rhetoric. These are the people that the Supreme Leader has surrounded himself with, and these are the people that actually have control of those weapons.
Dr. Bianca Adair, thank you so much.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Tensions are escalating in Minneapolis as Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem announced that more federal officers are heading to the city. Adding to those already existing, there are now over 2,400 federal agents in the metro area, more than double the size of the local police force. The FBI has assumed sole jurisdiction, a move that has sparked a significant legal and political rift between Minnesota officials and the federal government. Secretary Noem says the additional resources will protect immigration officers while continuing enforcement operations amid rising tensions. Earlier today, Pope Leo received Venezuelan politician and human rights activist Maria Corina Machado at the Vatican's Apostolic Palace. Machado asked the Pope to intercede for the liberation of political leaders and for the advance of the transition to democracy in Venezuela without fear. Pope Leo, who has followed the developments in Venezuela with deep concern, has invited all to respect the will of the Venezuelan people and to safeguard the human and civil rights of all. This comes as President Trump says he'll meet with the current acting president of Venezuela, Delcy Rodriguez, during a press gaggle. Last night on Air Force One, President Trump spoke positively about their relationship.
Venezuela is really working out well. We're working along really well with the leadership, and we'll see how it all works out.
Are we sure I can meet with Delcy again?
At some point I'll meet, yes. It's been very good.
To discuss this further, I'm joined by Orlando Avendano. He is a Venezuelan journalist and editor with Voz Media. Thank you so much for coming on. Now, we saw opposition leader Maria Corina Machado at the Vatican with Pope Leo today. What message does this meeting send to the world?
Well, it was very hopeful. Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. It was very hopeful, and it was a great sign to see the Pope with Maria Corina Machado, which is the legitimate leader of the opposition in Venezuela. Venezuela is a Catholic country. Most Venezuelans are Catholics, and that was very important to see, you know, to see the Pope, the Holy See, the Vatican align with the legitimate leadership of the opposition in Venezuela.
President Trump says there will be no more oil or money going to Cuba. Why is that significant, and how will that impact Venezuela's economy and its citizens?
Well, that's very important because the Cuban regime has depended on Venezuelans oil for almost 26 years. The fact that that's not going to happen anymore, it's very important so that Cubans can retake their freedom, which is something that I guess President Trump wants to achieve. In the case of Venezuela, that will be a very important shift, given that Cuba has been the main ally the regime have had for all these decades. And if it does happen, I mean, if the shift does happen and Venezuela will start, departing from Cuba, start aligning with the U.S. instead of Cuba, that will mean a lot given the things that have happened and the idea that the transition may actually start happening.
President Trump is scheduled to meet with the acting president of Venezuela, Delcy Rodriguez, this week in Washington, D.C. What do you think are some of the important topics on the agenda?
Well, I think the main thing is that the White House can recognize that she is the legitimate leader of the opposition in Venezuela. And if you want to have an orderly transition, you need her. You need Maria Corina Machado, given that, you know, the Venezuelans support her. And as what, you know, we saw what happened in the meeting with President Trump and the main CEOs of oil companies. They want stability. They want confidence in what's going to happen in Venezuela. It's going to be, you know, secure for them for years. That's something only Maria Corina Machado can offer them.
Orlando Avendano, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. Fragile Hope, Jimmy Lai's daughter, speaks as sentencing arguments for her father begin in Hong Kong. And why is a Democratic senator going after the Pentagon? Democratic Senator Mark Kelly has filed a lawsuit against the Pentagon and Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, accusing them of violating the Constitution by retaliating against him. You may recall the Arizona senator participated with other Democratic members of Congress in a video notifying U.S. troops they can deny an unlawful order. The federal civil suit was filed 1 week after Secretary Hegseth said the Defense Department would cut Kelly's military retirement pay over the video. Sentencing arguments for Jimmy Lai began today in a Hong Kong court. This phase, known as mitigation hearings, is the final step before the official sentence is handed down. The arguments for leniency are expected to last 4 days, concluding around January 15th. In December 2025, the 78-year-old pro-democracy activist and founder of the Apple Daily newspaper was found guilty of conspiracy to collude with foreign forces and conspiracy to publish seditious material. The charges under Hong Kong national security law carry a maximum penalty of life imprisonment. His lawyers have argued for a more lenient sentence, citing his advanced age, deteriorating health, and the burdensome nature of his long-term solitary confinement. The court has not yet announced the specific date for the final sentencing decision. Joining us today is Claire Lai, the daughter of pro-democracy advocate and media mogul Jimmy Lai. Claire has become a prominent international voice for her father as he faces this process in Hong Kong this week. So sentencing arguments for your father began today after 5 years of waiting for this moment. What is your family's primary hope for these hearings?
I mean, the hearing today is basically a continuation of my father's deeply unfair trial. We hope for a sentencing decision to come in soon. My father knows he has done nothing wrong, and I hope that is reflected in the proceedings.
Now, your father's legal team has argued for leniency based on his health conditions. How important is it from a humanitarian standpoint for this to move forward?
I mean, it's extremely important for his family and for everyone who knows and loves him. It's you know, I've on EWTN, I have gone through the litany of health issues that my father is facing, but the one that is, and I fully stand by them, but the one that is the most concerning for us is his heart. He started experiencing heart palpitations earlier this year. Tests have shown that he suffers from a first-degree heart block, which is not normal in someone his age. He has a blood disorder. He has an enlarged spleen, which had never been the case. And also he has deficiencies in that which protects his red blood cells from damage. And at this point, it is very much about saving his life. And we are very worried.
Now, you've been in Washington meeting with political leaders from both sides of the aisle, including President Trump, calling for your father to be released. Is any of this having any impact?
I mean, we are extremely grateful for President Trump and his administration for the support they have shown to my father and our family. And we have received a lot of support from both sides of the political aisle, and the kindness which they've shown my father has often been extended to us, and we are extremely humbled and grateful for it. And at least where certain things are concerned, like him receiving the Eucharist, I know that international support has made a big difference.
Speaking about your father receiving the Eucharist, you have told a lot of people who have been following his case about his deep religion and how that has sustained him. Can you just remind our viewers again what that is like now in this new year?
I mean, that is, you know, his physical body is breaking down, but, you know, I know that prayers and, you know, he reads the gospel every morning. He prays most of the time of the day. I mean, we don't get to visit that much because it's really, the allowed visits are about 24 hours a year, and the rest of the time he spends praying and drawing the crucifixion and the Blessed Mother. And I know that it's what protects his mind and his soul, and we are just extremely grateful for his faith. Just on the issue of the Eucharist, I know the government has said that he receives it regularly. We have said that he receives it extremely intermittently. To be precise, he receives it about he received it in the last 2.5 years a total of 11 times. As Catholics, that is not acceptable. I mean, we should at least receive it 52 times a year.
Claire Lai, please be, you know our continued prayers for you and your family. Thank you so much for
your
time
today.
Thank you. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, welcome to the family the special way Pope Leo brought in the church's newest members. Pope Leo encourages Christians to reflect on the gift of their baptism, which is the gateway to heaven, and to bear witness to it with joy.
E imitare i suoi gesti d'amore verso il prossimo.
At the Sunday address, the Holy Father recalled Jesus' baptism in the Jordan and explained that he chose to be baptized like all sinners in order to reveal the infinite mercy of God. By being baptized, the Pope stressed, Jesus shows that God does not look at the world from afar without touching our lives, our wounds, and our hopes, but that he comes among us. Pope Leo added that our Lord's baptism is an invitation to each of us to renew the promises of the sacrament, which makes us Christians, frees us from sin, and transforms us into children of God. They will be too young to remember it, but 20 children had a very special person welcome them into the faith, carrying out a tradition started by Pope John Paul II. Pope Leo baptized the babies of Vatican employees. EWTN News Vatican correspondent Valentina Di Donato has more.
As the bells ring, a new Christian life begins in the Sistine Chapel. After the first Sunday of the Epiphany, Pope Leo XIV continued a 45-year tradition and celebrated the sacrament of baptism for 20 children of Vatican employees during the Mass for the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord.
A te io ti battezzo nel nome del Padre e del Figlio e dello Spirito Santo.
And during the homily, Pope Leo XIV explained why we baptize our children, being the first and foundational sacrament of Christian initiation.
I figli che ora tenete in braccio
The children you now hold in your arms are transformed into new creatures. Just as they received life from you, their parents, so now they receive the meaning to live it, faith.
La fede.
The Holy Father said that while food and clothing are necessary for life, the most important factor is faith.
His provident love is manifested on earth through you, mothers and fathers who ask for faith for your children. Certainly, the day will come when they will become heavy to hold in your arms, and the day will also come when they will be the ones to support you. May baptism, which unites us in the one family of the Church, sanctify all your families at all times, granting strength and constancy to the affection that unites you.
Then the Holy Father spoke of the sacramental gestures of baptism and their meaningful symbols, like holy water and white clothing, which proclaims that the baptized person is freed from the bonds of sin. In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, YouTube, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Duto. Good night and God bless.